Ever wonder what fuels China's economic engine? Like, literally fuels it. I mean, we hear all the time about their trade dominance, but where do they get the raw materials?
Yeah, the stuff that makes everything from skyscrapers to smartphones, right?
Exactly. Today, we're going deep, way deep into China's mining industry. And let me tell you, what's happening there is not exactly what you'd find in a glossy brochure.
Far from it.
We're talking allegations of corruption, illegal practices, environmental devastation. It's like a whole other world operating under the radar.
A world that a former mining entrepreneur, Xiao Yunjun, knows all too well.
Yeah.
He actually spent a decade running iron and gold mines in Hubei and Henan provinces.
Wow. So he's seen it firsthand.
Absolutely. Now he's living in LA and he's speaking out, sharing some pretty shocking insights about what really goes on in China's quest for those valuable, valuable resources.
And that's where our deep dive comes in. We're unpacking his claims. What are these so-called black market practices? What's the impact? And what does this mean for everyone? Not just businesses operating in China, but for the environment and, yeah, even the global market. By the end of this, you'll have a much clearer picture of this hidden side of China's resource extraction. So let's start with the basics. According to our source, what does China's mining industry actually look like? Like, who controls what?
Well, the first thing to understand is there's a very clear distinction between state-owned and private mining operations. Think of it as the big leagues versus the minor leagues. The state-owned enterprises, they've got their hands on the massive reserves. I'm talking about those colossal deposits that are basically national treasures.
Got it. So the private guys aren't exactly competing with them for the same resources.
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah.
Private mines, those are usually working with reserves under 10 million tons. Your average entrepreneur is not digging up entire mountain ranges.
Right. So what are they mining?
The metals you'd expect. Iron, copper, tin, manganese. Think of the essential building blocks of heavy industry. And then there's the non-metals like gypsum and quartz. Construction, manufacturing uses, you know.
Makes sense. But things get a little more complicated and maybe a little more strategic when we start talking about resources that are, let's just say, a little more valuable to the Chinese government.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about rare earth elements, and this is where things get really interesting.
Because rare earths aren't just about smartphones and cool gadgets, right? There's a bigger geopolitical game at play here.
Exactly. China, they sit on the majority of the world's rare earth deposits.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly concentrated in Jiangxi, Guangdong, Guangxi, and Inner Mongolia. But Jiangxi, that's where the mother lode is.
So why are rare earths so strategically important? I mean, beyond making our iPhones glow, of course.
Think of them as the secret sauce for all kinds of high-tech stuff. Sure, they're in LEDs and MRI machines and all that. But here's the kicker. They're also vital for national security. Oh, yeah. Missile systems, rocket control systems, all that advanced military tech. Rare earths are absolutely crucial. So you can see why the Chinese government keeps a tight grip on those. They're not letting those slip into just anyone's hands.
Makes perfect sense. So we've got the state controlling the big, strategically important stuff and the private companies working with the more everyday materials. But according to Xiao Yunjun, even that landscape is shifting, and not in a good way for private players. He's claiming that state intervention's actually been on the rise since Xi Jinping took power. What's the story there?
Basically, he's saying the government's become more aggressive, you could say, in taking over private mines. They use all sorts of reasons to justify it, of course. But the end result is the same.
More state control.
A growing state monopoly over the whole mining sector. So it's not just about controlling the really rare stuff anymore. They're extending their reach.
And that brings us to a pretty significant case, the Shaanxi mining rights case. This seems like a classic example of where state interests and private enterprise clash, with allegations of corruption thrown in for good measure. Can you walk us through what happened there?
This case was huge. Involved billions of RMB worth of resources, coal, iron, even some of those precious rare earth elements. It really highlights how messy things can get. You had illegal trading of mining rights. You had accusations of bribery, I mean, serious bribery between officials and businesses.
And this wasn't just some small town scandal. It allegedly involved some pretty high level figures, didn't it? There was talk about Zai Yongkang, a former top official. Just to give our listeners a sense of scale here, who was he and why is his alleged involvement such a big deal?
Zai Yongkang. He was the secretary of the Central Political and Legal Affairs Commission. Now, that's a powerful body. They oversee all the law enforcement and security stuff in China. And the allegations suggest he was involved in trying to control how the public perceived the whole case.
Wow. So we're not talking about just a few bad apples here.
Not at all. When you have someone that high up allegedly involved, it suggests something much deeper. systemic issues, possibly reaching the highest levels of power. The Shaanxi case, it's like a window into a much bigger problem. Now, let's zoom out a little bit. If the Shaanxi case is one example, what are the more common patterns of corruption that Xiao Yunjun claims are happening in the mining industry? What's driving this, and how does it actually play out?
Yeah, let's break it down.
So his main point is that mining in China, it's just so big and so profitable that it creates this breeding ground for corruption. And he argues it's not just about individual bad actors. It's often about schemes that are actually driven by the government itself.
Driven by the government? You mean they're actively involved in these corrupt practices?
That's what he's alleging. He describes several methods they supposedly use. One of the big ones is rigging mineral resource auctions. So basically, the outcome is decided beforehand, and the bidding process is just a charade.
A charade? Wow.
Another one is straight-up collusion between officials and certain businesses. So those businesses get an unfair advantage naturally. But perhaps the most shocking allegation is that they actually fabricate data about mineral reserves.
Hold on. Fabricate data? You mean like making up how much coal or iron is actually in the ground? How does that even work?
Well, he claims they inflate the numbers. Let's say you've got an estimate of maybe tens of thousands of tons of ore. They boost that to millions, on paper, of course. This makes the mining rights seem way more valuable than they really are.
And then?
And then they use that inflated value to secure huge loans from banks. Basically, it's fraud. Systemic fraud on a massive scale.
It sounds crazy, but he actually experienced this firsthand, didn't he? That story about the carbon mine auction is pretty telling.
It really is. So he's participating in this auction for a carbon mine right. And get this. The starting bid is a measly 60,000 RMB. But he claims the government had already decided who was going to win. It was all prearranged.
So why even bother bidding?
He decided to test the waters, see how far he could push it. So he starts bidding, and the price keeps going up. It gets all the way to 10 million RMB.
10 million from 60,000. That's quite a jump.
Right. But then a director from the Land and Mineral Resources Bureau approaches him. This guy basically tells him to back off, that the winner's already been chosen.
And he was willing to bid even higher, right?
Oh, absolutely. But he was basically forced out.
Yeah.
And in the end, guess what? The mine went to the pre-selected company for that 10 million. The point is, it wasn't a real auction. It was a show.
So it wasn't just about making money, it was about control.
Exactly. They wanted a specific outcome,
yeah,
and they made sure it happened. It's this manipulation of the system for their own benefit. It's like, what's the point of even having these auctions if they're already rigged?
Mm.
It really makes you question the fairness of the whole system.
Hmm.
So we've talked about rigged auctions, but what other methods does Xiao Yunjun claim the government uses to, let's say, acquire private mines?
Right. What other tricks do they have up their sleeve?
He talks about a whole range of tactics. One is pretty straightforward. They just buy shares in profitable private mines.
So they become part owners.
Exactly. They get a piece of the pie without having to do any of the work. But they also use regulatory bodies as a weapon.
Like how?
Well, he claims the Safety Supervision Bureau is often used to target private mines. They might find some minor safety violation or maybe even fabricate one and then use that as an excuse to shut down operations.
That's harsh.
It's an effective way to eliminate competition or pressure owners to sell. And then there's the environmental angle.
Environmental? How do they use that?
They might accuse a private mine of causing environmental damage, like land subsidence, and then shut it down while conveniently ignoring similar issues at state-run mines. And in the most extreme cases, they'll just seize the mine outright. No legal recourse, nothing.
Wow. It sounds incredibly risky for private mining companies.
Extremely risky. You're constantly walking on eggshells, wondering when they're going to come after you. And, you know, Xiao Yunjun actually experienced this himself with a gold mine in Hunan province.
Right. The story is pretty intense. Can you tell us what happened?
So he and his partners, they had this gold mine in Hunan.
Yeah.
And a contractor, a guy named Li, basically took it over. Now, here's the thing. Li's brother was an official in the Central Commission for Discipline Inspection. That's the CCP's internal watchdog, you know, the ones who are supposed to be rooting out corruption.
Wow. A powerful connection.
Extremely powerful. So Xiao Yunjun is out of the country, and this contractor just stops making payments.
What did he do?
He tries to go through the legal channels. He talks to the local police chief, who initially seems sympathetic. He even promises to arrest the contractor. But then something happens.
What happened?
Li's brother makes a phone call. That's all it took. Suddenly, the police chief changes his tune completely. He backs down and refuses to help.
It's like something out of a movie.
It really is. It shows you how much power these connections can have. And to make matters worse, they had invested a fortune in that mine. 130 million RMB. Over 90 million of that was paid in cash.
That's a huge loss.
A devastating loss. And it wasn't just about the money. Xiao Yunjun is also deeply concerned about the environmental damage caused by these illegal mining practices. He argues that when private companies are working with corrupt officials, they often cut corners, they ignore environmental regulations, they use dangerous methods, all to maximize profits, and the consequences can be devastating.
He gave a pretty disturbing example about gold extraction, right?
Yeah, he described how the contractor who seized his mine was using a method called heap leaching. It's a really crude way to extract gold. Basically, you pile up the ore and spray it with a solution of potassium cyanide. Now, cyanide is extremely toxic.
That sounds dangerous.
It is. It leaches the gold out, but it also poisons everything around it. Xiao Yunjun claims that this method completely destroyed the land around his mine. Nothing could grow there anymore. And the runoff contaminated downstream farmland and killed fish in nearby waterways.
That's awful. And it's not just gold mining, is it?
No, he talked about other types of mining as well. Mm-hmm. Iron smelting or processing. They all generate a ton of pollution, sludge, noise, dust. And the wastewater from these processes, it's often loaded with heavy metals and other contaminants.
And they just dump it.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
Straight into rivers and farmland. It's incredibly damaging. And, you know, he claims the CCP knows all about this. They just try to hide it from the rest of the world.
How did they do that?
They stage manage things for international inspections. They show off their fancy state-owned mines, the ones that meet environmental standards. But they keep the polluted sites hidden.
It's a double standard.
Absolutely. Image over reality. And, you know, these issues aren't limited to China. There's growing concern about Chinese mining companies operating overseas. A recent report by the Business and Human Rights Resource Center documented over 100 cases of alleged persecution linked to Chinese mining operations in 18 different countries.
Wow. 18 countries.
Yeah, it's a global issue. India, Peru, Congo, Myanmar, and Zimbabwe. Those are the countries with the most allegations.
And what's Xiao Yunjun's take on this? Why is this happening overseas?
He believes they're exporting their corrupt practices. They're using the same tactics abroad that they use at home. Lobbying, bribery, cutting corners. And he doesn't mince words. He says corruption is rampant in both the state-owned and private sectors in China. It's just the methods that differ.
So what we're hearing from Xiao Yunjun is a pretty disturbing picture.
Yeah.
Allegations of corruption at every level. Government-sanctioned land grabs, widespread environmental destruction, and a disregard for human rights, both in China and abroad.
It's a lot to take in. And it raises some serious questions. If these allegations are true, what does it mean for businesses operating in China? What does it say about the Chinese government's commitment to environmental protection? And how should we view Chinese investments in other countries?
It's a complex issue, but it's one we need to be talking about. So here's a final thought for our listeners.
Yeah.
If these practices are as widespread as Xiao Yunjun claims, what does that tell us about the true cost of the resources that power our world? What are the hidden costs that we don't see? The environmental damage, the human suffering, the corruption. It's something to think about.
Definitely. It's a reminder that the things we buy, the things we use every day, they have a story. And sometimes that story is a dark one.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.
See you then.